Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, May 3rd, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Sound Support. This is a Parkland College Foundation. Josh Gottheil Memorial Fund creates full-ride scholarship for non-traditional nursing students. This article is by Jana Wersima. Champaign. It's not uncommon for community college students to balance education and work. However, not every student starts off their college career as both a recent high school graduate and the founder of their own production company, with experience bringing bands such as the Flaming Lips to Champaign-Urbana. But Josh Gottheil marched to the beat of his own drum, quite literally, given that one of his first gigs as a musician was playing the drums at his own bar mitzvah party, according to his mother, Diane. Josh's sister, Lisa, noted that while a lot of kids want to be part of a band, for Josh, it didn't stop there. He took that same love and turned it into building something bigger around the music, she said. Josh attended Parkland College briefly until he was diagnosed with lymphoma, a type of blood cancer. In the years since his passing at age 19 in 1989, Josh's family has honored his memory by providing a variety of support to nurses through the Josh Gottheil Memorial Fund for Lymphoma Research. The latest iteration of this is the Josh Gottheil Memorial Scholarship, which will provide full tuition, fees, books, and other program expenses for non-traditional students in Parkland's Associate Degree in Nursing program, the Parkland College Foundation announced Wednesday. According to Daniel Wilberg, Associate Vice President for Development at Parkland and Executive Director of the College Foundation, the scholarship will be awarded to one student each year. We thought about something more that we could do for nurses, and this is a little different than what we've done before, said Diane, adding that this is a very worthwhile cause. Parkland has a fantastic nursing school, and I'm really proud that we're able to support students pursuing that path, Lisa said. The college defines non-traditional students as those who do not follow the usual path of starting college immediately after high school and attending full-time without major outside responsibilities, Wilberg said. Non-traditional students are a core part of the Parkland College population, and they are often balancing their academics with work and family responsibilities, she said. A full-ride scholarship can be the difference between starting a program and finishing it, allowing students to reduce outside pressures and stay on track to completion. She added that while Parkland enrolls non-traditional students in all of its programs, nursing is one that tends to attract those returning to school or balancing work and family responsibilities. The new scholarship is particularly generous in that it covers supplies that students would normally be responsible for, such as uniforms, clinical supplies, and fees for licensure exams, Wilberg said. As for the story of the scholarship's namesake, Diane said that one of the factors in Josh's love of rock music may have been the advent of MTV. His older sister was also fond of rock and is one of the owners and founders of Grandstand Media, which offers artist representation along with other public relations services. I don't remember a time when I was deep into music and he wasn't, at least the kind we both eventually decided was good, Lisa said. We more or less got there at the same time. For me, that was around 1980, when I discovered the Ramones. She added that their parents had her and Josh each learn a musical instrument. For her, it was piano. Josh initially learned the violin, before switching to drums. In addition to playing at his bar mitzvah, Josh also sat in the window and played at the opening of a family friend's bookstore and played poolside with his band at Crystal Lake in Urbana, his mother recalled. Those were his early gigs, Diane said. Her son took his music seriously and was a little bit of a taskmaster when it came to practicing with his bandmates, she said. According to the Josh Gatio collection in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Library and Archives, comprised of materials related to his work in music, which his family donated, Josh was the self-appointed manager of his band, The Dangerous Acquaintances, and took care of booking the group's gigs. Josh later joined The Dead Relatives around December of 1984. David Holtgrave was the lead singer of the group. The reason Holtgrave started the band was that he was bringing these bands to town in the mid-80s, Diane said. And he said they'd come in these beat-up old cars and he'd have hardly any money to be able to pay them with the turnout, he said. Well, we needed an opening band that we don't have to pay, so let's start our own. And so Josh kind of learned from him. Josh became a promoter at age 16 when Holtgrave asked him to step in as he was busy writing his dissertation. Some of the bands Josh brought to town, both before and after his diagnosis, included Descendants, Throwing Muses, 10,000 Maniacs, Husker Du, They Might Be Giants, Billy Bragg, and Jane's Addiction. Booking shows started as a way to see his favorite bands, but it quickly became something more, Lisa said. He realized it could actually be a viable business. Looking back at the shows he was booking, it's incredible to think he accomplished all of that while still a teenager. She added that he was totally honest, a trait valued by bands and their agents, and had a good sense of humor. He really was my best friend, she said. Diane remembers seeing Josh in his element during a packed show at Mabel's, a music club that used to be part of the campus town scene on Green Street. It was very clear that this was going to work for him, she said, and he looked at me and said, Mom, I can do this. So he didn't want to go away to college. He wanted to stay here and he wanted to work on bringing these bands that he loved to town. So that was his plan. Josh ended up attending Parkland in the fall of 1987 and continued to run his production company, Subversive Sounds, at the same time, college officials said. However, Josh wasn't in college for long. He was diagnosed with cancer during his first semester. One of the first signs was a high fever, and Josh's doctor suspected lymphoma almost at once, Diane said. After a lymph node biopsy, Josh went into chemotherapy almost immediately, but that didn't stop him from doing what he loved. And that whole year, well, it wasn't a year, it was from about December through May, June, he was bringing bands to town, Diane said. He was working full time. After finishing chemotherapy, Josh was busy as could be and moved to Chicago, where he co-founded Concert One Productions. He also took a trip out to San Francisco to visit Lisa and see the Pixies in concert in 1988. Gatil had booked the band before and was friends with the member Kim Deal. He was pretty busy and enjoying life, Diane said. However, the Gatils knew that the type of lymphoma Josh had was aggressive and had been warned that if the cancer returned, it would return quickly, which it did. We always stayed positive, Diane said. I always think there's no reason not to hope for the best, even in today's world, and that's how we felt. That's how he felt. He was pretty resilient. Josh died on April 4th, 1989. The Gatil family, including Josh's father, Fred, who died in 2016, established the Josh Gatil Memorial Fund for Lymphoma Research in 1994. Diane said the fund's creation was inspired by amazing nurses. Was inspired by amazing nurses who cared for Josh when he received a bone marrow transplant at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis after his lymphoma returned. He was there for 4 months, she said. We got a better view than we would usually have gotten of what nurses go through. The fund annually provides career development scholarships through the Oncology Nursing Society, Diane said. To date, over 1,000 oncology nurses have received these awards. The God Heals organization has also endowed nurse resiliency funds at Carle and the Siteman Cancer Center at Barnes. Wilberg expressed gratitude for the God Heals latest gift. Our role at the Parkland College Foundation is to align donor passion with the priorities of the college in a way that creates a lasting impact. And this scholarship is the embodiment of how when two missions come together, it creates something powerful for our students, our donors, and the broader community, she said. It's all about the nurses, Diane said. And I think most of us realize that supporting nurses is a 100% positive thing to do. And if you do something that people hear about, then it gives them ideas to do similar things. Lisa believes her brother would be proud of what the fund has achieved in his memory. Even though it's not directly tied to music, it carries the same spirit of looking out for people and building something that helps others, she said. Continuing inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. Savoy's Dave and Sharon Grogan have been there to cheer for all 7 of daughter Chelsea's marathons. Both retired, they enjoy being Chelsea's marathon roadies, Sharon said. Mom and Dad, who moved to town in 2015, certainly were glad they made the trip to last Sunday's London Marathon, where in a field of 26,071 women, Chelsea finished 239th. It gets better. Chelsea set a Guinness World Record for fastest marathon by a female with multiple sclerosis. Chelsea was diagnosed days after competing in the 2024 Boston Marathon. While medicine has come such a long way, this disease still has the potential to take away so much physically, she said in London. Doing something physically challenging in the face of that feels like an act of resistance. It's a celebration of what my body can do, and it can do hard things. The family celebrated at a British pub with Chelsea's Hoboken, New Jersey track club teammates and a college friend from Southern Methodist. And there was more to toast than a shiny medal and Guinness certificate supported by family, friends, and community. Chelsea raised over $4,600 for WizKids, the UK's leading charity for young wheelchair users. On tap, the Tokyo Marathon in March. It is hard to put into words how proud we are of Chelsea, Sharon said. Since her initial diagnosis, she has exhibited extraordinary strength, resilience, and courage in facing MS. We especially admire her determination not to allow this disease to keep her from her passion for running and enjoying life to its fullest. And in history, area history, in 1926, Ulysses Mills, chief engineer of the Illinois Central Power Plant in Champaign, narrowly escaped fatal injury when a hot water pipe burst and drenched him with scalding steam while he was cleaning accumulated lime out of 2 other pipes. The dense steam blinded him temporarily, and the hot water rose to his knees, causing deep burns on his legs and feet and hindering his escape. He also suffered burns to his head, back, arms, and hands. His cap's visor protected his face. He is now at Burnham Hospital, in great agony, but expected to survive. In 1976, minimizing losses of Champaign County's prime agricultural land will be a major consideration in the future expansion of Champaign-Urbana's urban and residential areas, according to the county's Regional Planning Commission, RPC. Bill Powers, a senior planner on RPC, said they are considering the cost-benefit ratio along with economic and social factors, he said. In 2011, two men underwent surgery at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana following shootings outside Marketplace Mall in Champaign. Champaign Police Chief R.T. Finney said officers came to the mall after police received a report of a person with a gun inside a vehicle in the mall parking lot. As police began to look around the parking lot and located the vehicle, officers heard shots fired. Finney said officers saw an armed man who had shot and was continuing to shoot another man who was lying on the ground. Continuing with community news from the Champaign Walmart, article titled, Person Stabbed in Parking Lot in Critical Condition. This is by Luke Taylor. Champaign. Police are investigating a stabbing Friday morning in the parking lot of the Champaign Walmart that sent one person to the hospital. Champaign police said officers were called at 9:19 a.m. to Walmart, 2610 North Prospect Avenue, and found a 27-year-old victim suffering from a serious wound. Officers provided medical assistance with the help of the Champaign Fire Department until the victim was transferred to a local hospital, where they are listed in critical condition. No arrests have been made, and the investigation is ongoing. Police say officers are actively working to gather additional information, including witnesses and available evidence. They ask anyone who has additional information to please contact them at 217-351-4545. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. Those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477 or 373tips.com or via the free P3Tips mobile app. Information submitted to Crime Stoppers is completely anonymous. Calls are routed to a third-party national call center that receives the information, completes a form, then passes the tip to the appropriate law enforcement agency. Caller ID tracking is not used and conversations are not recorded. Crime Stoppers pays cash rewards of $5,000 for tips leading to an arrest in a homicide case, $2,500 for tips leading to an arrest in a felony crime involving a firearm, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to the arrest of those responsible for any other crime. And in another article, former Carlson Payson Plumbing Building owner seeks rezoning ahead of potential sale. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. The owner of a building with a lot of history, including being the first with an air conditioner in the county in the 1950s, has requested that it be rezoned with a potential buyer in the wings. On Thursday, the Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission will consider a request by Heritage Development Services to rezone the structure at 616 North Jackson Street, just across the train tracks from Danville High School, from R2, single-family residential medium density, to B3, general business, in order to allow for a warehouse office to operate there. Heritage CEO Dean Carlton said, the building has a prospective buyer not currently located in the city who is set to bring in a new to Vermilion County business. He said the structure was originally built for Carson Payson Plumbing Company in the 1930s, and in the 1970s, his father moved his construction company's offices there. Carlton said the intent is to change the zoning to match use of the structure. He said a different construction company had most recently been located there, but the building has been vacant for more than a year. According to the site description, the property is a 0.68 acres parcel with existing warehouse office space. And continuing with our community, we have Law Day, titled Prosecuting Potter. Champaign County Courthouse transforms into Wizarding World's Wizengamot to teach fourth graders about role of law in the U.S. This is by Luke Taylor, Urbana. A trial for the boy accused of murdering his professor at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry resulted in a hung jury Friday morning at the Champaign County Courthouse in Urbana. That was the outcome of at least one of Harry Potter's several trials throughout the day, each presented to a jury of local fourth grade students. Witnesses included Lord Voldemort, Hermione Granger, Hagrid, and more, all portrayed by attorneys, judges, and other folks who work at the courthouse. The mock trials were part of a Law Day event organized at the courthouse to help kids learn about the role of law in the United States. We had a meeting where anybody interested could come and sign up. I told them if they want to buy costumes and ham it up, we can help reimburse some cost, said Champaign County presiding judge Randy Rosenbaum. We filled up in no time. They certainly did ham it up, with Hogwarts scarves and false beards and accents to match the characters. Even lawyers who don't have offices actually in the courthouse got involved, Rosenbaum said. Mock trials ran throughout the morning and early afternoon, with a rotating cast of legal professionals in each role. Afterward, students had a chance to hear briefly from Rosenbaum, attorneys, probation officers, court security officers, the jury coordinated, and court reporters. Each professional explained their role in the court system and answered questions from the students. You see on TV and in the movies what courtrooms are like. You hear about crime and you hear about lawsuits. Even kids hear about it. And they don't have a real understanding of what it's like and what the roles of everybody are, Rosenbaum said. For his part, he explained that a judge's job during a trial is comparable to that of an umpire or referee, making sure that everyone involved understands and follows the law. That part is almost fun, he said, compared to handling sentencing hearings or providing opinions on issues. More than anything, he said that he wanted kids to feel safe in the courthouse and understand it as a place where good things should happen. We really want kids to understand that the court system is a good place. That's where you go to get justice, Rosenbaum said. Your justice may be different from somebody else's justice, but everybody's working really hard. Everybody's trying to be fair. After viewing the mock trial, students swung by the jury room to learn about Abraham Lincoln and his connections to Champaign County. Prior to the Law Day events, the Champaign Court also held an essay writing contest and a poster contest for local students to discuss the role of law. Rosenbaum said they ended up opting to plan a pizza party for an entire class that submitted posters on the subject. And continuing with a front page article from Kathy's Mailbag, is the Nutcracker Ballet moving from Krannert Center to the Virginia Theater? Yes, it is, CU Ballet Executive Director Kay Green says. A freshly redesigned and reimagined production of Tchaikovsky's ballet, The Nutcracker, will be staged at downtown Champaign's historic Virginia Theater in December. This last season, our Nutcracker played to sold-out audiences and still had a wait list, she said. The move to the 1,463-seat Virginia will allow this beloved and ever-popular holiday favorite ample room to continue to grow its audience after a 20-plus-year successful run inside the beautiful Tyron Festival Theater at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The additional seating capacity at the Virginia Theater will allow us to expand our audience capacity by 500 patrons per performance, potentially increasing our total audience by 2,500, she added. The more performances we can bring to the community, the more awareness we create about the art of ballet, which aligns with our mission. Green credited Mike Ross and his Krannert Center team for their support and partnership over the last two decades. And so we look forward to this next chapter and are excited to work with our friends at the Champaign Park District and the Virginia Theater. The next question was, so sorry to read about Salt and Light's recent bedbug scare. No doubt they did the right thing in getting rid of all potentially affected inventory at their thrift store. What kinds of donations do they need to replenish their stock? Jana Wiersema reported on the infestation in the News Gazette's April 23rd edition. Lisa Sheltra, Director of Community Engagement at the Salt and Light Ministry, said, "We lost a great deal of inventory, so we'd be glad to get our shelves replenished as soon as possible. Any type of donations at all will be helpful to address the lost financial support. But the types of items that were discarded from our inventory were clothes, shoes, purses, belts, scarves, hats, and other accessories, as well as towels, curtains, linens, and rugs. Donations may be made at the Salt and Light Thrift Store's loading dock in the rear of the building at 1819 South Philo Road, Urbana, or at the ministry's drop-off only location, 1512 West Anthony Drive in Champaign. We do accept clothing in any condition, so even if items are worn, torn, or stained, they will still support our work through the revenue they produce as recycling. However, we aren't able to use fabric scraps and quilting squares or items that have mold, mildew, excessive soil, or any kind of pest presence or damage. If those things come to us, they'll need to be discarded, as not even our recyclers will accept them. We are not able to launder items on site, so to be in resaleable condition, they should come to us washed. Anything with pet hair or dander, leaf or plant detritus or seeds, or smelling of cigarette smoke or other strong odors will go to salvage rather than being directed to the store, even if the underlying quality and condition is good. The Salt and White site website includes a list of most of the items they can and cannot accept. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, May 3rd. Please stay tuned.